this is the second Musar V'Ah of the year, my first Musar V'Ah. So usually, on the first Musar V'Ah, I get the advantage of spending a whole Musar V'Ah explaining what a Musar V'Ah is. I don't have to prepare. But since this is the second Musar V'Ah, I can't do that. But I'm not really sure if it was done last time or not. So let me just quickly, in 1 minute or 2 minutes, explain what I think a Musar V'Ah is supposed to be. Also, because not every person who gives a Musar V'Ah gives the same type of Musar V'Ah. So at least one way I understand what a Musar V'Ah is supposed to be. Now, I have a little bit of a right to explain because I'm the one that started it. So, but okay. Anyway, the basic idea was that we have, the yeshiva is very big on Musar, but most of our Musar has a intellectual bend to it, Chiddush. But there has been a feeling that many people have I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but practically speaking, how do I do it? I know I'm supposed to learn about Asmada, but practically speaking, how do I do about doing that? I know I'm supposed to daven with Kavana, but practically speaking, you know, I have a Yetzer. How do I help get myself to get there? So the Musar V'Ah was supposed to be, rather than intellectual chidushim, it was supposed to be much more down-to-earth suggestions. I can't promise every Musar V'Ah lives up to its expectation. But the concept was that we're supposed to have practical suggestions on things. In other words, a Musar Shmuz gives you the intellectual concepts and hashkafas and attitudes. But now I want to put it into a lemaisa. So you don't find that in a lot of the Musar's farm, that they don't, Messiah the Shah, you know, a lot of farm, they just tell you what to do. But how do you do it? You know, gaiva is bad. Okay. But how do I stop being about gaiva? You know, I think I'm great. it's terrible to be about gaiva. Yeah, but I am. You know? it's terrible. Okay. So, you know, like you need very often practical suggestions. Okay. Anyway, so today's obviously Musar V'Ah, I guess it's pretty obvious, is practical suggestions about Edel. Now, to get to the topic, I want to first explain the question. We have Edel, Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, Yom Kippur. Now, they're all obviously related to doing tshuva. That seems to be the, you know, Edel is this my time supposed to be doing tshuva. Rosh Hashanah is part of the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Aseres Yemei Teshuva means the 10 days of tshuva. That includes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur itself, we have the whole davening is Slach Lano Vidui. So they all seem to revolve around tshuva. But yet, there are four different times. So, there seems to be, you know, it's not just four times of doing the same thing. There seems to be a difference, purpose, or slightly at least, of Edel, Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, and Yom Kippur. And that is that's what I want to discuss, the question. What is unique about Edel? Why is Edel different than Yom Kippur? You know, if you can say, well, Edel is supposed to be working on tshuva. Well, that's what I was supposed to do. What am I supposed to do in Edel different than Yom Kippur? What do I need an Edel for, you know? Why can't I just wait till Yom Kippur and skip Edel, which is what most people do? You know, they skip Edel and they wait till Yom Kippur. So what is the function? In the yeshivish asfarim, the fancy term is the avoida, right? That is, what is the avoida of Edel, right? You have the same thing we have the Tisha B'Av is for avoida for the Beis Hamikdash. We have Shavuot and Betamiz in 3 weeks and 9 days and Tisha B'Av. What's the difference? All the same. Not all the same. So there's obviously in different things as a in the Svarim, especially the Ramchal, which we'll discuss maybe a little bit more, but now's not the time. is very big on how each Yontif has a very unique avodah. The Jewish calendar is set up as a magal. Magal means a circle. A spiral, where it keeps on going and developing. And as you move from each point, Rosh Hashanah brings to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur brings to Sukkot brings to Shmini Atzeres brings to Chanukah, which brings to Purim, which brings to Pesach, which brings to Sfira, which brings to Shavuos, which brings to Tisha B'Av, etc., which brings you back to Adol, and you keep on going again. And hopefully you're going up, 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 up in this spiral until you get to the highest level possible. But there is a connection. That's the Messias Hashem, the Ramchal. That's the author of Messias Hashem. Moshe Chaim Sato in Derech Hashem, other places, and very big on this. But we don't want to go off that tangent. The question is, what is the Avodah of Edel? What are we supposed to be doing during Edel? So let's stop for a minute, and we'll come back to this. The most simple thing is everything. Edel, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sarmei Tshuva, the goal is Tshuva. Now, how do you do Tshuva? Well, the problem is that we have, I don't know about you people, but I know for myself, have hundreds and thousands of Averis, right? You know, if anyone, whoever says the Vidui of the Chidah, you know, on Yom Kippur, because, you know, he has a list there about 100, probably 150, 200, maybe more Averis, and you read it, say, yeah, I did that one. Okay, sounds good. Okay, yeah, did that one. Yeah, did that one, right? So basically, we have, you know, almost all of them. You probably did that one too. So we have lots and lots of Averis. And then there's not everyone he mentions. There's Los Essays and Bito Essays and who knows what. You know, so the question is to do, how do you can't do tshuva on everything. Because, you know, tafasna meruba lo tafasta. If you're going to do tshuva on everything, then you're not going to do tshuva on anything. But on the other hand, you want to do tshuva on everything because you want to get kapara on everything. So we explain this every year. It's a very, very big yisayit. It's not my chiddush, but it's a big yisayit and you have to know it. Obviously, you only can do tshuva on a few things. I don't know, a few, you shouldn't be just one because it might not work and then you're left with nothing. But it can't be that many. Let's say 4, 5, I don't know. On the other hand, you want to do, that's your project for the year. On the other hand, you want to do tshuva on everything. So how do you do that? So the Bali Musa say, a gaval de gavoit. The Bali Musa say that tshuva, there are different types of tshuva. There's immediate tshuva, and tshuva that eventually I'm going to do tshuva. If I work out a system where eventually I'm going to do tshuva, it's already considered to some extent tshuva now. Right? Like when I was a kid, Russia used to always have these 5-year plans. That was like Russia always known 5-year plans, right? So I have a 20-year plan, meaning like this. There's a yisayit, it's a Rabbeinu Yain, and others says it. And whatever, it's a shmuz and the chidushi aleiv, that everything, mitzvah and avera, are all interconnected. Just like the human body. If you have an infection in your toe, if you don't take care of it, you could die from it. Because it's one body. You know, it's a little teeny infection. But if you don't, everything's connected. And if something's good in something, it can spread throughout the whole body. So any improvement in any one area will start a chain which eventually will improve everything if you keep on going. Right? It's an amazing thought. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. If you improve any one thing and then you keep on going, and every year you improve one more thing, so to speak, in 50 years you'll be a tzaddik. Because it's a chain reaction. Mitzvah gereres mitzvah. Right? So I want to improve everything. I want to do tshuva. I got all these thousands of averes. I want to improve them all. But I can't practically work on all of them as a real serious project, that real serious project, I can't work on all of them. So what I say is like this. I say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I feel terrible. I did all these averes. And I would like to stop, and I'm going to try and stop. And I have a plan how to stop. What's my plan? I'm making a serious effort on stopping the following five, which I'm really working on. And if I succeed in that, then in 25 years from now, I'll get everything for fixed up. And that is considered a certain type of tshuva on everything. Okay. That's what the Bawi Musa said. I didn't make that up. Okay. Anyway, so we pick five, four, I don't know. I don't say that means you can't, you don't say that. Therefore, Lashon Hara is not on my list. Okay, I'm allowed to speak Lashon Hara. But it's not if Lashon Hara did not make the five for this year, then it's not your project. You have like projects that you're really working on. Of course, you try not to speak Lashon Hara, like you stop trying not to do any of it. Now comes the $1 million shaila. What should go on this project? If I have four or five or three or four, whatever, of what goes on this project? How do I pick? Right? Everything's interconnected. So what do I pick? Good question, no? Good question. Thank you. So there are two answers, and they're both right. The first answer, since I have to always disagree with Pinchas, the first answer is you pick the most important thing, right? Obviously, you have to pick the most important thing. Now, even that's a little bit complicated. What makes something most important? Pashtus, the most important means it's the biggest mitzvah or biggest aver. There's Asur Meira and Asay Toiv. They're both right. But it's really, there's even a bigger, more important. I'm ready running late. There's a concept. I'll give you an example. The famous question, theoretically, what's better? A person is not, a natural person wants to get married. Is it better that he marries a Jewish girl and he's not going to keep Tyrus and Mishpacha and going to be with her and she's a Nida? Or is it better he should marry a non-Jewish girl? So the truth is, if you look up in the Shulchan Aruch, the Avera of marrying a Nida is Karetz. The Avera of having beer with a Nida is Karetz. The Avera of having beer with a Shiksa is only Kanoyim Paigimbo, which is a little bit less than Karetz. So Pashas, it means that marrying a Shiksa is less of an Avera. So it should be better. And that is probably right, that if you would know that the person would have one time get married and then lightning would hit him after the first beer or the first week. And, the guy only has 1 week left to live. We probably would tell him, and he says, I have to marry someone because I'm going to die in a week and I want to marry someone. And I'm either going to marry a shiksa or a girl and not keep the mishpacha. I think halacha l'maaseh, we would tell him to marry a shiksa. However, as everyone knows, we get very upset when people marry shiksas. Why? Because marrying a shiksa, even though it might not be as chomer as a gavera, but the ramifications of marrying a shiksa are much worse. Because if you marry a Jewish girl, first of all, there's room to become a baal tshuva, and then, you can become a baal tshuva, your wife can become a baal tshuva, which happens very often. If you marry a shiksa, how are you going to become a baal tshuva? Your wife is your guy. Unless you divorce her and give up your kids, it's not so simple. She's going to want to be megayer, that's already, many people marry shiksas and then they want to become baal tshuvas and they say, but they're stuck. They're not ready to give up their wife and kids, so you get stuck. Second of all, you marry a shiksa, she doesn't just come with the iser bias, she also comes with a Christmas tree and all kinds of other things, and you don't feel Jewish anymore, and that causes millions of other averas. So even though from a halacha point of view, marrying a shiksa might not be as chomer, pashtus, maybe there are other people, some people disagree on that too, but on a ramification, I don't know what the right English word is. Ramification is not the right word. But, this is the, what's the right word? the consequences. That doesn't sound right.
Long term?
Well, okay, sounds good. Okay. No one here knows good English, I see, like me. In the totality, the problem of marrying a shiksa is great. So if you went out to do tshuva, we would tell you to rather do tshuva on marrying a shiksa than on marrying a, you know, non-Jewish girl. And that's not from Jew. So when if you have to pick what's most important, you have to pick what is most important as far as its ramifications, usually. Besides what's the biggest aveira. Right? There are certain averas or mitzvahs, because it's not just doing and stopping averas, it's also doing mitzvahs. For example, you might decide that you're going to work on doing well in shir, because doing well in shir will have, if I do well in shir, then I'll stay in yeshiva, and I'll stay in yeshiva, and I'll stay long-term in yeshiva, and I'll become a rabbi. So the long-term effect of doing well in shir, you know, will have a tremendous ramification on me. While if I don't do well in shir, I probably won't stay in yeshiva long-term, I won't stay in kodol, and, you know, in 20 years from now, that decision of doing well in shir will have a major ramification. So even if there are other areas that are bigger mitzvahs, theoretically, maybe they are, maybe not, but this might have a tremendous ramification. Rashiva used to give an example, I know I'm running late, that a guy who is socializing. So he used to say like this, that if the guy grew up in Borough Park and he's in an environment where it's trafe, what he's doing, and if his Rebbeim knew what he's doing, they would look at him like he's a Russia Marusha, and et cetera, et cetera. And he knows that. So then, psychologically, the fact that he's doing this is a tremendous psychological burden. He cannot look himself in the mirror and think he's a Ben Torah, knowing he's doing what he's doing. And he also knows he can't really have an honest relationship with his Rebbeim. Because if my Rebbe knew what I was doing, he would go ahead and kick me out of the yeshiva, whatever. So he basically, psychologically, can never relate to the Rebbe, can't relate to himself. So that, besides the intrinsic problem, that's going to block his own whole experience of succeeding in yeshiva. If a guy, on the other hand, grew up in a day school, grew up in Boca, where everyone's doing that, and now he's in Or David, where everyone's doing that, or attention did that, right? Okay, should I? Or OJ, or whatever it is. I don't know, there he is. Everyone's doing that. And the Rebbeim, though, they're doing it, and everyone is fine with it. So maybe that's not the priority to work on. Maybe there are other things to work on, because it's not psychologically blocking. Now, maybe it is, because if it's on his head all day, it's also blocking him from functioning. But maybe it's not. Right? So you have to figure out. It's not a universal rule what is major and what's not. You have to know. So the first thing you work on is what is major. The second thing, see, that we do agree with, is you have to work on what you're going to succeed. Because obviously, a main goal is succeeding, especially because we said that when you succeed, it's mitzvah gereres mitzvah. So if you don't succeed, it's almost like, you know, there are people. I always say that I had an aunt who used to be on a diet, and as a kid, I was a skinny kid. Once upon a time, I was skinny. I used to think it was so funny because she was always on a diet. Every time I ever met her, she talked about her diet, but she never lost any weight. So I always thought that was very humorous, because, you know, because all she talked about all day is her diet, but I don't remember her ever losing weight. So there are people like that, that if you don't get anywhere, that's not good. You got to get somewhere. So you got to pick something that you're going to succeed. Okay. So if you're making your projects, you should pick. And it could be, sometimes Asay Toiv are easier than Sur Meiraz. Very often. So it doesn't mean you, that's awesome. People think it's only Averis. It could be mitzvahs you're working on. Positive things. So you pick, let's say we pick the grand number of 4, but it could be less. You know, things that, the reason I picked 4 is there's a reason, but I'll get back to it. But of things that are major and things that are easy. Now, usually they don't overlap. Usually you can't find something which is major and easy. That doesn't usually happen. But since we're running in so much time, we'll get to how you can overlap the two. Okay, we'll do it now, because, okay. There's a Navardika Yisayid, a Navardika Mashal. Navardika Mashal, I say this every year, the great Mashal. Navardika Mashal is you have a heavy train, and the heavy train has to get over this little weak bridge. It has to get over the bridge, but the bridge is very weak, and it can't carry the train. So what do you do? So the Navardika Mashal says you roar up the engine, and then you zoom across the bridge. Einachinami, the bridge will collapse under the weight of the train, but by the time the bridge collapses, the train will be on the other side. The Nimshel, exactly, is. I don't know exactly why this Nimshel fits into the Mashal, but that's a good question, but that's not for sure. That the Nimshel is that if you can sometimes do something where you once you do it, the bridge collapses, that's, you know, even though it's very difficult, but you solve the problem. For example, here's an example. A guy has a very, this is a true story. Guy had, it came to, when I was Rabbi in Israel, a guy had a very big problem with non-Jewish music, which, you know, there are different levels of non-Jewish music. He was having a serious problem with non-Jewish music, not really not kosher non-Jewish music, and he got convinced in Edel that he, when he came to Israel with a whole mamish, with a whole collection, a whole suitcase full of tapes, literally a whole suitcase, not just a few, you know, whole suitcase, going to be there for a whole year, and he's addicted to it, so he brought his whole collection of, you know, hundreds of tapes. Okay. You know, he got inspired during Edel, so he wants to do tshuva on it. So he told me, here, he wants me to take the suitcase and put it in the, you know, lock it up in some, put it in the storage room for him. I said, why should I put it in the storage room? Why don't we just throw it out? He said, throw it out? You know how much these tapes cost? I said, so what? You don't want more? Yeah, but probably in a week from now, I'll change my mind and I'm going to want them. So when you go with that attitude, he's, you know, there's no way. You know, he's already deciding now that, but after Yom Kippur, I'm going to take them back. You know? So there's no way that that tshuva is going to last. But if he would have thrown them out, which he didn't, then there's a good chance that the tshuva will last. Because you throw out, right? You take your television and you throw it out. You take your computer and throw it out. That your odds that you're going to go in and buy a new one after you just threw out the old one, you know, it's not so, you know, you don't have the new one. And it costs a lot of money to get a new one. And you threw out the old one. How stupid are you? You feel like such a hypocrite. I just took a $1,000 computer and threw it out. I'm going to buy another one. Yeah. So there's ways in Mussar of getting yourself stuck. The example I used to give in Israel, which you cannot do here, but Rabbi Knarik was an amazing masmid. He used to learn 24 hours, 7. So if he used to learn all the time. So guys, if you'd ask Rabbi Knarik for a Seder any time, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, he would learn with you. So there's a guy who wants to sign, he wants to learn Motzoi Shabbos, 11 o'clock, instead of wasting time. So you ask Rabbi Knarik for a Seder, right? You ask Rabbi Knarik for a Seder at 11 o'clock, Rabbi Knarik will be there. Now, if Rabbi Knarik is there, you commit yourself, you're going to have to be there. So you created a situation where you're stuck. So even though you made something like a bow on something very difficult, it's hard to keep to learn Motzoi Shabbos at 11 o'clock. But if you went ahead and you asked Rabbi Knarik for a Seder, then you're guaranteed to keep it. So that is a trick. There are ways. You gotta be ways that you can create. We said that the two things that you're supposed to be mekabo is either one, something which is very important, and two, something which is you're guaranteed, almost guaranteed to succeed. There are ways of combining the two. It's not easy. It takes a lot of thinking. But there are sometimes you can create a system where you're committed and you're stuck and you have to do it. Let's say you decide you want to do better in shir. So you go ahead and you make up a chavrusa with a weaker guy, they're going to help him and share. Now you're stuck. You have to chaz a share every day during supper with this weaker guy. You know, the guy, I don't like the word weaker. The guy doesn't get share as strong as you. But meanwhile, it's better, good for you, because you're getting going over share and crystallizing it. So, but you would never learn every day during supper, but you commit it to him, and he's counting on it, and he needs it. So there are ways of doing that. Okay. Anyway, let's get back now to the original question. The question that we started was, what is unique about Edel? Why do I need Edel? Why can't I start doing tshuva on Yom Kippur, which many people do? Why do I need Edel? So there are three answers, I believe. Maybe, I think. First answer is, based on what we were saying, you need a lot of thought. You have to figure out what is the biggest problem or the biggest growth, because we said it's either positive or negative. And it's not always so easy to figure out. What's holding me back? What's my psychological or practical problem that's holding me back from succeeding in yeshiva? It's not always so easy to figure that out. It takes a lot of thinking. What could I do that would, if I would do that, it would get me going? It would get me started. You can't figure that out in 5 minutes. Yom Kippur is a very, very busy day. You're busy and traveling all day. You need sometimes hours to think about that, to go through the day. Right? So first thing, Edel is a good time. It gives you time for thinking, trying to figure out, then trying to figure out ways to, okay, now I figured out that this is what I want to fix. Now we want to do etzah number two. How am I going to put teeth in it that I'm actually going to keep it? I have to think of this trick of asking Rabbi Kinarik for a chavrusa, but Rabbi Kinarik's not in Miami. So I have to think of a different trick. So that also takes time. Yeah, but he's Rabbi Luther's going to tell you no. You need to figure out, it's not easy. You have to figure out what's central, and then you have to figure out to put teeth in it. That a person who's serious about doing tshuva needs to really spend a good few hours thinking about it. I don't say that lightly. It really is more than a few hours, but I made it not a little few hours. But you need a decent amount of time of thinking. Okay. The second reason why you need Edel is you have to try it out. Right? Very often you think something is great but once you try it, you see it doesn't work. Let's say especially the second type. We said the things you're mekabel are things that seem that you can definitely do because you want to succeed. There are many things that people think they can definitely do until they actually try doing it. And when they try doing it, they discover that it's not as easy as they thought. Right? I remember as a kid, it's a long time ago, I was sitting on a train in New York, and there was a guy who was probably drunk, and he was a chain smoker, and then he was smoking, and then someone must have looked at him, and I remember saying, "You think I can't quit whenever I want? If I wanted to quit, I could quit. I'm smoking because I want to smoke." Yeah, hole in my head, right? So people think a lot of things that sure, I could learn till 10, I could learn till 11:30, no problem. Yeah, you do it one day, right? Exercise, what are they called? These companies that you go for exercise, gyms. How do they make all their money? Because they don't sell, you can't go to a gym one time. I don't think most gyms. You have to buy membership. Comes New Year's Eve, everyone makes a resolution. This year I'm going to exercise. You go down, how much is it? Well, we have a special. For 1 year, it's only $1,000. That's less than $3 a day. Wow, that's a bargain. $3 a day, and I'm going to go, and I get the swimming pool and the basketball courts and the weights, and I'm going to be there for 3 hours a day. That's a bargain. He goes one time, and then he never comes back again, right? Because that's how people think, that of course I'm going to do it every day, and they don't. So Elul is a great, the great time of practice. You got to try things out. You think you can stay till 11 o'clock at night learning? Try it. You think you can get up at 7:15 before Minyan and learn 15 minutes and join, whatever, Rabbi, who was it, Rabbi Goldman? Who's learning at 10:15? At 7:15. Rabbi Blinder. Oh, Rabbi Blinder. And maybe we'll even figure out the base measure guys can get hot cocoa too. Okay? So try it first. It might not be as easy as you think. So that's, and then if it doesn't go, then you still got chance to pick something else. If you wait till Yom Kippur to make your kabbalah and then you pick something which you think was easy and then it doesn't go, you're finished. Because you made a kabbalah and it didn't go, But if you start it now and you still got 2 weeks to practice till Yom Kippur, if it doesn't go, you still have a chance to scratch it and start something else. The third advantage, which is probably the most important, is since it really is very hard to make a kabbalah, as many people who tried will tell you, a person needs a momentum. A momentum is what helps when you, there's nothing that breeds success like success. So if you start now and you have already 2 weeks, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, so you got a momentum. I did this. So then when you come back after Sukkot, I did this. I was getting up every day at 7:15. So you got a momentum. It's much more likely you're going to keep on doing it. But if you never did it, especially since your motivation wears off, it's Yom Kippur, you're all motivated. You come back after Yom Kippur and your motivation isn't the same. And there's no momentum. So to start fresh, to all of a sudden start getting up at 7:15 after Yom Kippur, you never did it before. You made up your mind on Yom Kippur and neither, I think I'm going to get up at 7:15 every day, but I never did it. So it is so much harder. So the odds of succeeding are many, many times greater if you start earlier. So we have three reasons. I don't say that's the only ones, but they're for us practically. I think they're all good reasons for why you have to start at all. Rav Itzada has some mystical reasons, right? That guy said, the sooner you get online, the better kapara you get. That's nice too. But practically speaking, the first come, first serve, he says. So Hashem gives bigger kaparas to the guy who gets online earlier. That's Rav Itzada says. But the Mai says we have like this. One is you need time to plan. Two is you need to practice to see if it works, to try it out. You need tryouts. In the store, it looks great. When you bring it home, it don't work. And three is you need to spend time on it to get a momentum. Okay. Go ahead.